come on and get it, honey, while the getting's good.
I'm kneeling at bat with Judith Owen, and there she be next to me. And she has a brand new CD, Come and Get It. She's got a residency at this fabulous speakeasy called the Mandalay Bar at the McKittrick Hotel. And I am just thrilled that she's here. Hi.
Hi, Robin. I'm so thrilled to be milling about with you yet again after all these years, after COVID. I mean, it's like, where has the time gone?
I know. So what have you been up to the past 3 years?
This, I can only say, because I live, as you can tell with my British accent, because I live between London and here where you find me in New Orleans, I'm actually in my little, behind my studio here, in a little den with all my lovely photographs of New of the things I love in New Orleans. You've got to see the Mardi Gras Indians right behind me there.
But honestly,
the best place I could have spent COVID was in New Orleans, because people were still... because you can't, you know, cope without music or food. So people were basically taking to the streets, taking to porches, doing performances. There was a piano that was like screwed onto the back of a flatbed truck so that people could drive around town and give concerts. It was really an extraordinary place to be, and I'm so grateful I was here. But the upside of it for a lot of people, I think, is that you just got more creative and inventive. And I just wanted to do something joyful and something that made me smile and made people happy, because I just could not do one more Judith Owen, deep, meaningful, full of, you know, emotion, angst.
I know. And I remember during COVID, you had a show that was like, fuck off or something.
Oh, Robin, for fuck's sake, will remain infamy. In the world, for fuck's sake, because as a Brit, you know, I would say every two minutes something weird would happen, remember, and I'd just be like, for fuck's sake, what now? So it became for fuck's sake, and then I did that twice a week, and it kept me sane, and it kept the community that was tuning in every week twice a week. It was amazing. It was an amazing lifeline. And that, when I came down to be down in New Orleans full time, that became Live from Jude's Place. And then it started to become the basis of this, because I've been listening to jazz since I was a little girl. I was introduced to the unsung, as I call them, my unsung heroes and heroines and role models, trailblazers like Nellie Larcher and Julia Lee and Mary Lou Williams and Pearl Bailey, Dinah Washington, all these women who opened the door for people like Blossom Dearie and Peggy Lee, who opened the door for women who want to be badass musicians, who want to be killers at the piano or whatever instrument they choose to be at, or singing wise. And these ladies were singing about sex and celebrating it, female sexuality.
This is such your wheelhouse, Jude. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. And it's like, It's kind of like, you know, it's amazing that 70 years ago, these women were singing about stuff that all the way up, right now, women are being told to get back in the corner, to get back in their place, and to not to dare act or behave as if they are sexual creatures with choices over their own bodies and beings. And it's an extraordinary thing that these women were so... you know, they were such, like I said, they were pioneers, and they were talking about this stuff long since. So I made this album. Of course I made it here. Of course I wanted to do, you know, make this dream come true. And I had the most remarkable musicians in the world down here. I had the time, I had the inclination. I wanted to be happy, smile, and want to laugh and dance around the room. And the outcome was, come on and get it. Now it's the super deluxe vinyl. Let me show you.
Who shot those stunning photos? Oh my gosh. Who shot those photos?
My friend Rick Guest. He's the most amazing British photographer. And the reason I fell in love with him and his work before we became dear friends is because he became quite famous for having photographed the Royal Ballet in London. And I went to see an exhibit of his. And I could not believe that he could capture dancers in flight, in movement, in their every sinew, their every you know, their very being, but always moving, always in movement. And so the whole of this, and as you can see, as I said in the middle, you know, what he does, he manages to grab that thing that makes a person alive, moving,
yeah,
animated. And I'm an animated performer, so that's what he got. And he knew I was going for the kind of Rita Hayworth, Katharine Hepburn, Dietrich crossover. I'm a woman in a suit with a lot of big hair.
I was going to say.
Ruling, you know, ruling the stage, ruling her gentleman callers.
Yeah, some of my favorite photos of you are where your hair is like standing up straight, like somebody caught that image of you, of your, because you're always crazy wild hair.
Always flying this stuff around. And for this, of course, it's in that, you know, I didn't want to just, because I'm a jazz, you know, I'm a very jazzy writer and singer and performer. I mean, I love jazz so much, as you know, and I'm a singer-songwriter and I love classical music and I pull it all together. We know that, you know, you've known me for so long now, Robin, you know my style. But I didn't want to just sing jazz standards, and I can't do anything that doesn't mean something to me deeply, authentically. And these were all songs I grew up loving, and these are the women I wanted to be. I wanted to be braver and bigger and bolder like them. I wanted to be unapologetic. I use this word all the time. I wanted to be unapologetic about being a woman and being proud of that and leading with that strength. And it's taken, of course, my whole life to get to that point. And this record has really helped. But
it has that Judaism quality.
Now I've got a plethora of young women who like come to my shows and reach out to me online and through social, you know, media, and say, tell me how I need, you know, tell me how to do this. How can I be more confident? How? I love it. I look to these women for those answers. I'm so thrilled that young women would be looking to me. I'm thrilled when women of any age ask me that question, because I feel like I'm on a quest to prove. And I've got two girlfriends that have just kicked the ceiling in with their stilettos, as it were. Jamie Lee Curtis and Jennifer Coolidge are both proven right now.
Oh, yeah.
You do not disappear and become irrelevant when you're over 40 or 50. You do not suddenly become invisible. You're not just like cashing in the check, in the chips, because you're nothing anymore, because you're irrelevant. Goodbye, Don Lemon. So sorry. But it's like, you know, that's the kind of ignorance and cruelty that we've all grown up with, where you feel like suddenly you no one sees you anymore, that you are irrelevant, that you turn to dust. It's bullshit.
And I
love that these friends of mine, these women in particular, who I've adored my whole life, are helping make that very, very clear. It's a very good time to be a young woman and to be really, really, like I said, as a musician and artist, to be incredibly evolved and self-aware and strong inside and empowered. It's also a very, very important time for women who didn't grow up with all that encouragement and that, you know, that sense that they could do anything, be anything. It's important that women who are over 40 are supporting their fellow women, their sisters, as you want to call it, so corny, but are also realizing that they are not going to buy into this bullshit anymore.
Right.
That suddenly they don't mean anything, and suddenly they just have no voice and no one cares. This is not the truth. We've just been sold a bill of goods, as far as I'm concerned.
You own it. You own your power. You own your sexuality. I've always admired that about you. And I have to say, when I got the email about this residency, I said to my husband, Michael, it's so way past our bedtime, but we have to
get going. I love Michael. I love you both. I can't believe it's just, there have been a few times during COVID where I have tried to figure out, I'm serious, how to get in touch with you, how to find you. What was your program? What was your pod? What was your, I'm serious. And honest to goodness, when I got the like, Stephanie says, for the McGittrick Hotel for Mandalay Bay, for the residency, milling about, and I was just like, honestly, I know it sounds so dumb and ridiculous, but I actually was, it was almost like, I was like conjuring you up. I was drawing you to me. Because I, you know, it's been a long time and I didn't know where you were and how you were and anything. So it was like, this is fantastic. I know it's late, but you'll be so glad you did it.
Oh, I cannot wait. So I want to break this down. How did you come to get involved? And did who are the gentlemen callers? I'm very intrigued.
Six piece and me, and it is going to take the roof off, let me tell you. Oh. Those are my gentlemen callers. They're the core band around which we made the album. Then, of course, we brought in a big band. I brought Jason Marsalis guested, Nicholas Payton, Donald Harris Jr. You know, it's just like extraordinary people that guested on the record. But that's the solid core. So that's the core that I'm going to be doing Jazz Fest with tomorrow here in New Orleans. So we're coming straight from that to do the McKittrick. I tried out the McKittrick. You see, it's one of those amazing places. They do this show called Sleep No More, which is...
Have you seen?
I have indeed. And it's really quite an extraordinary, terrifying experience.
Did you do the James Bond thing too?
No, I did not.
James Bond immersive, that was.
Oh, no. No, you see, I need to go. You see, this is like different things all the time. See, I had a mask. I remember the mask. Freaked me out. Yeah. And but it's the film noir version of Macbeth. And then they end in the speakeasy in the Mandalay Bar. And then I take the stage and then you have, and it somehow it makes perfect sense.
You're part of Sleep No More?
I follow it in the same book, the same thing. So the audience are right there and they're seated and they're it's done. And then I come on as quickly as humanly possible and we're off.
And I love it.
And you're having a late night.
Okay, now that makes sense because now I remember the ending to Sleep No More. We wound up in this bar behind me. Yes. Awesome.
And it's right for this music. It's you know, this is sexy music dripping with double entendre and innuendo. You know, this is exactly where it should be. It should be in a dirty red dark room.
Let's talk about some of the songs on there. So I love the name of this, King Size Papa.
There will be I am actually going to do in July, I'm going to be in June or July, I'm going to actually do a video down here to go with that. I mean, I have to, because you kind of ask what comes to mind. But I got to tell you that King Size Papa, I got a man that's almost 8 foot tall, 4 foot shoulders, that ain't all, King Size Papa. And the punchline is, they take the door off the hinges when my baby comes to call. And it's just like, what a line. They take the door off the hinges when my baby comes to call. I'm going to get goosebumps just saying it. This is what I mean. The humor, the joy of these women in their best, sexy, flirtatious way. You know, when they're the band leader, they're in control. They're doing it. And there's gorgeous men around them playing. It's fantastic. I tell you, there's nothing better. But King Size Papa is just, it's alluding to, you know, a big man, Robin. Okay, you forced me to say it. It's alluding to a big man.
I got a man that's more than 8 foot tall, 4 foot shoulders, and that ain't all. King Size Papa. He's my king size papa. I take the door off the hinges when my baby comes to call.
A big man. What about my man's an undertaker? No.
Well, you see, now these are the bonuses that are on the fabulous.
Yes.
Super lights. It's such a great song. My man's an undertaker. He's got a coffin just your size. It is such. It's a Dinah Washington. So she, you know, she like made it famous. I mean, these weren't, none of these songs really were songs that at the time, you know, were meant for white people to hear, because God knows, you know, they would have, you know, died of horror. It was basically, you know, for African-American audience, it's for the black audience. And it's like, and that's why they're so good, is because, you know, they're not like namby-pamby wet songs. These are just like, yeah, these are like get you in the solar plexus. And the idea that it's like, you're out, he's in, he's an undertaker, and if you're not careful and bother me anymore, he's going to put you in a coffin and take you out, your feet going first. I mean, it's just like, it's so good.
You better stop knocking on my door at night. You better keep your mouth shut, good and tight. My man's an undertaker. He's got a coffin just your size.
I mean, all these songs are just brilliantly, brilliantly funny. They're stunningly witty. And I mean, I just think that that's what just makes me light up when I sing them. It's they're just the sheer joy of them on every level. It's fantastic. And musically, of course, they're just fantastic.
What about Satchel Mouth Baby? That's a mouthful.
And it means somebody like with my giant cheeks, there's a big old face like mine. Satchel Mouth is actually a song that was a huge hit for Nat King Cole.
Satchel Mouth Baby, we could have a lot of fun, because you are the cutest one. You're so neat, sweet. Walking down the street, all the ladies holler, they go holler. You are the cutest one.
There I am living in London and outside London in Kent in the country. And my dad's an opera singer at Covent Garden. And so it's all classical music. But our house was positively throbbing with jazz and blues, because he was such an unusual lover of this. And my mother was such a big band lover. And so
you got it all.
I had it all. And he had this collection of 45s that were hits in Britain in the 50s. Nelly Lutcher, Fine Brown Frame being one of them. And that was the song that started it all. I thought these women were stars. I thought they were famous in America. And when I first came over here, you know, in the 90s, that's when the penny dropped, and I realized that they were all but forgotten. All but forgotten, except, you know, the Peggy Lees, of course, who's, you know, hard lives as they had, but, you know, she was white. She was white. She was successful. She was powerful. There's still more to remember. And a more straightforward experience to be that white woman singing, you know, songs that were nowhere near as much fun, by the way. You know, but I do, he's a tramp, because I love Peggy Lee. Peggy Lee was banned from the Southern States, you know this, because they thought she sounded too black.
Wow.
They couldn't believe that she wasn't. So this is what we're talking about.
You're living your best life, Jude.
it's in all honesty, I feel very fortunate to have found such a beautiful project to come out of COVID with, you know, and something that liberated me in more ways than one, not just to make me happy and to get me out of this depression that we were all in, wondering if we'd ever be normal ever again, whatever normal means, but, you know, if we'd ever sing and play ever again. But the effect it's had upon me and in finally standing up and being absolutely, you know, I've always been a confident woman at the piano, but this is something else to feel unapologetic. There's that word again, but I can't help it. It's like with this record, I'm so proud of it and I love it so much. Singing this song, singing this music, performing, it's an act, it's an exercise in female self-confidence and empowerment, because what it teaches you is to not really care what anybody thinks about you.
Never.
And you're pretty unique to know that, because most of us do so much. But I think the trick is to know that not everybody's going to like you. Not everybody's going to want to listen to your music. And if you're not a musician, you know, not everybody's going to like you. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. Because that's okay. You don't have to go through life being a pleaser and worrying about every last fucking person in the room thinking that you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. You really don't, because that just stops you from enjoying life and who you are.
I got to cut you off because I'm running out of time. So,
oh my God.
Let's just plug this gig that
you're doing. Can we? I know it sounds like they're going to come to some sort of like revivalist movement of me talking like this, but it's not. I would love to plug. It's going to be basically Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at the Mandalay Bar at the McKittrick Hotel, immediately following Sleep No More. I can tell you that it's 10 p.m. on Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday. Friday, 10:30, Saturday, 11 p.m. Come down, tickets on the door, have the most fun. Believe me, what it is that we're bringing Jazz Fest, we're bringing Mardi Gras, we're bringing New Orleans to New York, to the McKittrick, because it's going to be a party.
I cannot wait to see you. I will be there on May 13th. I will be wide awake.
Saturday night, you got no excuses. You can just collapse on Sunday. Come on.
I love you to Mises Pieces.
Oh, I love you too. And I'm so glad that we've been here we are again, reunited. And it feels so good.
Yeah.
I can't wait to catch up with you.
Oh, I wish that I wish, I wish, I wish, oh, oh, I say, I wish I could travel his way.
Always news.
Always refreshing.
Always candid.
Always billing about.
Robin Milling delivers what celebrities are saying to you.